specific.
Yeah. The Milky Way and other galaxies. Okay, so maybe this is a point when it would be good to bring the stars up, because I'd like to test something that I'm not actually sure of the answer to. So, yeah, that would be great, thanks. What I'd like to know is whether we get any sense of the Milky Way, maybe not looking like it does in the slide, but just from looking at the stars in the planetarium and getting a sense of whether in some bits of the dome there are more stars than in other bits of the dome. See, we've got a little Star Lab portable planetarium, and sometimes I get the feeling that with that you can sort of look at the stars in the Star Lab and you can say, ah, right, there's more in that bit of the sky than in other bits, and that's the Milky Way that I'm sort of following round. Brilliant. Okay, so we're still getting a bit of stray light from the front. I'll see if I can kill that. Ah, no, of course, in here, you go one step better and you've actually got your own Milky Way. I'd forgotten that. So, yeah. But I think we can maybe try this another time. Might not be easy to do on the fly. But I think even if you switch the Milky Way projection off, then it would still be possible to convince yourself that you were looking at the Milky Way just because there are more stars in that kind of band. Let's say you compare that bit over there. I mean, there's just not as many stars there as there are over here. Okay? I don't know if you've ever noticed that before. But since in our inflatable planetarium we don't have anything as fancy as this, the best we can do by way of showing people the Milky Way is just to point out that in certain regions there are more stars than others. And that's basically following, you know, from Orion, sort of up over towards, sort of, I guess, Cassiopeia. Where's Cassiopeia gone? It's, back into the Milky Way. That's certainly where it should be, so that's where I was expecting to find it. There we go, that's good. Okay, yep. So that's good. So our basic tool in the planetarium to talk about the Milky Way is the Milky Way. You know, you've actually got that. So that's one that is kind of relatively easy to weave in to a presentation, and I know that many of you do. Could we bring the slide back up, Joe? Maybe just leave the stars, though, for the moment. We might go back to them. Oh, perfect, right. Okay, that's great. So do you sort of see what I mean? That even without the Milky Way to guide our eye, the band of light, that I think that there's a sense that over our heads there are more stars than there certainly are in that patch, and possibly over here as well. It's a wee bit hard to be sure, but I think...
when you look at the southern hemisphere, there's a lot more...
There are indeed. I'm going to come on to that. Yep. Okay? Right, perfect. Thank you. Great. Right. And now I've got to bring my laptop back to life. Yeah, just asking whether you could do that as a macro to have the Milky Way off and on. Yep. So this is a picture of the Milky Way in optical radiation. So it shows the band of stars. So, you know, I guess everybody here knows very well, and probably most of your audiences will know very well, that the Milky Way is the galaxy that we belong to, and that I've done it yet again. How many times? It's certainly getting a big build-up, that last slide. I hope it lives up to it. Most of your audiences will know that the Milky Way is the band of stars that stretches above our heads, and because we are inside our galaxy, then that's what we perceive as the structure of our galaxy. So I've got a couple of nice movies. I guess these are the kind of things that you could make more use of if we can manage to get the mirror dome in here. This is one that is from the Very Large Telescope Array in Chile, and it's one of the best observing sites in the world, and to time-lapse photography you see the Milky Way, as someone was saying, I think it was Alistair, and the southern skies are that bit more impressive. You're seeing bits of the Milky Way that you can't see from here in Scotland. This is another movie. This is just zooming in on stars in actually not the main band, but what's called a globular cluster, 47 Toucani, the constellation of Toucana, the Toucan. And it's a little group of somewhere around about a million stars. No one's counted them all. But what you see is individual stars imaged by the Hubble Space Telescope in the final slide. Way back at the beginning was just a sort of, you know, naked eye view, but well, with a long exposure photograph through a camera, and it was from the Anglo-Australian telescope in the Australian outback. So if people ask how many stars are there in the Milky Way, well, really we don't know, but we think it's certainly in excess of 100,000 million. The number does go up and down a bit. It depends on, you know, the flavour of the month. Essentially, the way that astronomers work that out is by modelling the stellar density close to home and trying to kind of work out how that varies throughout the rest of the galaxy. So it's a wee bit like how you would work out the population of the country. You know, you're not going to be able to count every last person. You can try and do that via a census every few years, but you can have a rough estimate. You know, there was all that stuff a few weeks ago about the 7 billionth person being born. Well, you know, again, how do they know for sure? So it's the same kind of game. And I guess if people are asking you how many stars in the Milky Way, it would be good if you give them a number, but emphasise that it's an approximate number and that it's, you know, give or take a few 10 billion. Astronomers aren't going to argue. So that's an awful lot of stars. And indeed, the key discovery of the last 100 years in astronomy has been the realisation that the Milky Way isn't the entire universe, but is just one rather poetically named island universe in the universe, which contains many, many, many galaxies. So this is what we think the Milky Way would look like if we could get outside it. What we're looking at here, again, I'm sure you'll know, is Andromeda, which is one of the things you can show people in the planetarium as well. So the Andromeda galaxy is a grand design spiral galaxy, just like the Milky Way. And the formation of such galaxies is kind of hard to really get our heads around. So let me just make a few sort of general remarks about it. First of all, the reason why it's hard is that you can't sort of hang around and watch it happen, because it takes billions of years. So you can try and simulate it on a computer, where you speed the whole thing up, or you can take snapshots of other galaxies at different stages of their life and hope that that will tell you something useful about how maybe our own galaxy formed. And one of the key discoveries of the last 10 years or so is that we've come to realise that an awful lot of galaxies seem to go through a life history that involves colliding with other galaxies. So the Hubble telescope, as usual, has played a great part here. It's showed us lots of images of this in the process of happening. But as I say, because the process is so drawn out over time, you can't like sit around and watch it happening, but you can see snapshots. Now this relates to something I was saying before, as Derek was asking about supernovae triggering star formation. So here you see lots of places in these galaxies where stars are newly formed. Now how do we know they're newly formed? Because they're blue. And the blue stars are the hot ones, they don't hang around for long. So if you see stars which are blue in a galaxy, they must have been made fairly recently. What I mean by fairly recently is the last 10 or 20 million years, which might not sound very recent, but compared with the age of the universe, is pretty young. Okay, so many, many galaxies undergo mergers and collisions. Here's another one. So these are other galaxies that are being observed in the relatively nearby universe. And what we've learned is that as you look further and further away, we see this happening more and more. Now, as you look further and further away, you're looking further and further back in time. So always one for any cheesy links with popular culture. This really is a classic example of where you can link it to what George Lucas had to say a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That's really what cosmologists, the astronomers that look at galaxies in the big picture, that's really what they're doing. And what we've learned by looking very far away is most of the details of how galaxies came to form. And one of the key observations that's helped us do that is something called the Hubble Deep Field. In fact, there's subsequently been a Hubble Ultra Deep Field, which just looked a wee bit deeper still. And a lot of people will have maybe heard of this because it's quite an iconic image. And I think it's also worth drawing your attention to, because it's a relatively easy thing to talk about in the planetarium, because again, it just involves familiar constellations. There's the Plough. So if you want to show people where the Hubble Ultra Deep Field is, then, oops, we can zoom in on that patch of the sky. So just above the handle of the Plough, and what we're going to zoom in on is a bit of sky where there's really hardly any stars at all. But as we eventually zoom in, everything you see in this image is a galaxy. The reason they went for that bit of sky is because there wouldn't be too many foreground stars sort of in the way. So those images are of galaxies which are 10, 12,000 million light years away, 10 billion light years away. So we're seeing them as they were when the universe was very young. These galaxies themselves are very young. So in 2003, there was a follow-up to this called the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. It just looked a wee bit deeper. Essentially, how this works is just like how you would do it with your own camera. If you want to image something that's very faint, you could use a flash, but that's not going to work if the thing is 12 billion light years away. So what you do instead is you just use a very long exposure. Okay? And the long exposure here was actually weeks on end. The Hubble telescope was just staring at this bit of sky, not continuously. It would go and look at other things in between, but it would go back and look at that patch of sky. So Hubble Deep Field was about 99, but 4 years later it looked even further back, the Ultra Deep Field. And we believe in the Hubble Ultra Deep Field you're looking at the universe as it was less than 1 billion years after the Big Bang, almost before there were any galaxies. The very first galaxies were around then, and this is what some of them look like, been referred to as tadpole galaxies. So what you're looking at is galaxies which are in the process of merging and interacting with their neighbours. So we still see examples of that happening today, but we see a lot more examples of it far, far away, which means a long time ago. And it kind of suggests to us that the way that galaxies formed is through this process of merging and bumping into other things and coalescing with them. And that actually, for many galaxies, things have settled down a bit by now. But back in the early history of the universe, it was a much more violent business. Okay, so some general background there. Obviously, most of this you can't really refer to in the planetarium, but you can certainly show them Andromeda. And again, many of you might know that Andromeda is actually heading towards us. So we are going to merge with Andromeda in a few billion years, which is just part of that big cycle that's been going on for, you know, pretty much the entire history of the universe. That galaxies don't seem to be isolated, they seem to bump into stuff and merge with stuff, and that helps to give them their kind of interesting shapes and structure. And one of the things that I think you are already plugging, but it's certainly good to do so, is the Galaxy Zoo project, where people are encouraged to kind of take part in the process of, well, I suppose I have to say it, it's a wee bit like stamp collecting again, but it's just going through observations of literally millions of galaxies and trying to work out patterns in the shapes. So I'm encouraging people to get involved in Galaxy Zoo is a jolly good thing. Just wanted to say a little bit about our own galaxy again, and the centre of our own galaxy. So the centre of our own galaxy is in the direction of Sagittarius. So you've got your teapot shape for Sagittarius. So you've got the spout, and the spout's just pointing towards the galactic centre. So first of all, the stars would look more impressive in that region. Again, you can show that by going to the southern hemisphere. And if you want to talk about what's actually there, well, it's pretty impressive, because what we believe there is at the centre of our galaxy is a supermassive black hole. Now, how we know that is bringing in something which, you know, I've got as a kind of the final topic in a wee while, which is again this idea of looking across the whole electromagnetic spectrum, because this is the Chandra satellite. It was launched in 1999, and it was looking in X-rays at the centre. Remember I said that if you get a black hole orbiting a big star, then it pulls matter off the star, and as it does, the matter gets accelerated and heated up and it gives off X-rays. Well, that's what's happening in the centre of our galaxy, but like big time, because it's not a star-sized black hole, it's a black hole that's tens of millions of times bigger in mass than the Sun. So this is what we see in X-rays if we zoom in on that region. So this isn't an animation for once, this is real stuff, this is a real image, sequence of images. So it's called Sagittarius A. There's hot gas streaming off from the centre. So the idea is that gas is flowing onto the central black hole. It gets accelerated as it does, and some of it gets deflected away into two beams or jets. And meanwhile, in the centre, you get X-rays given off because it gets super accelerated as it gets dragged down onto the black hole itself. Back to optical light again, just with an ordinary telescope, albeit a very big one. The Very Large Telescope Array in Chile, over the last few years, has helped us to make this movie, which is quite stunning. These are the orbits of stars close to the centre of the galaxy, and there's one. And what we'll see in a wee minute is what it does now. Of course, we don't see the black hole, that's just added in. But we can work out where it is from how the stars orbit, and if you see how this one does its thing. See how fast it went there? Now, this is reminiscent of what you see, say, for a comet in our solar system. It's back to Kepler's laws again. Kepler's laws say that when something's orbiting a big thing, it will move faster when it's closer to the body and more slowly when it's further away. So you see a star doing that, and we can sort of work out what the mass is. So I thought this was worth throwing in because, first of all, it's, you know, real exciting stuff at the frontiers of what we know about the Milky Way. But I don't know how many times I've been asked questions about the Milky Way, about black holes, and about whether you would get sucked into a black hole. And the short answer really is no. You would if you got really, really close to it. But stars like this one will be able to orbit the black hole in the centre of the galaxy quite happily for many millions of years. When the star's orbiting around, it doesn't really care whether it's a black hole that's there or just an ordinary star that's there. It's not as if black holes have somehow got extra special powers that can drag things in. Essentially, the reason why black holes are bad news is only if you get inside what's called the event horizon of the black hole. Because if you do that, then you can't escape. Not even light can escape. But if you're just orbiting far away from it, then it's just like orbiting another sort of star or even a planet. It just is that you're going to be going faster because the black hole is more massive than an ordinary star would be. So black holes don't really suck things in. But if you happen to get very close to one, then you wouldn't be able to escape. And when I say close, I mean really close. I mean, you know, within kilometres away from it, rather than, as you know, normally we think of close in astronomical terms as meaning millions of kilometres. But you'd have to be really very, very close indeed to a black hole before it would prevent you from escaping. Okay, and this is an animation this time. But this is trying to give us an idea of what's deep, deep, deep at the very heart of that last animation. So the previous one was real star positions. This is just an artist's impression. But what we've got is a kind of donut-shaped ring of gas around the central black hole. It's that that's given off all the X-rays. And as material is dragged down onto it, a bit like water going down a plug hole, then what happens is that you get charged particles, electrons, accelerated along these jets, process called synchrotron radiation, but that's all pretty advanced stuff. So this is real hardcore astrophysics. This is miles away from, you know, just the patterns of the stars and the constellations. But nonetheless, it's kind of out there, because people hear about black holes and they hear about, actually, what you call this thing is a quasar. Again, a phrase you maybe heard before. These are active galactic nuclei, or quasars. And we think that there's a supermassive black hole at the centre of pretty much every galaxy, and that they're responsible for those galaxies producing lots of X-rays and high-energy radiation. Now, our own supermassive black hole isn't really very active at the moment, but we think billions of years ago it probably was. Of course, none of us were around to see that, But if we look at other galaxies which are billions of light years away, we can see them as they were billions of years ago, and most of them seem to be active. So we reckon ours probably was too. Ours has sort of calmed down a bit now. It's gone through its rebellious teenager phase. Okay, so that's some sort of pretty heavy-duty astrophysics, but that's to give you some you know, insights on not just our Milky Way, but ideas about galaxies in general. Joe, are you still there?
Yeah,
yeah, that'd be good. We'll pause for breath again.